This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. So, what now? Second career? Leaving federal service? In federal service? Mid-career? And for all the answers, we have our new guest, special guest, Michael Townsend. Michael is a former Fed, life coach, mid-career coach, different kind of coaches.
Yeah.
You're going to make sense of all this. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Bob.
And Ann Vincent, the ever-efficient Ann Vincent, joining us as what?
Business development, Bob.
Okay, business development. Good morning, Ann. It's been a few weeks.
Yes.
And the ever-efficient Dorothy, the engineer. You can't hear Dorothy, but she said hi as well. All righty, Michael, I need a coach here. I'm close to retirement. I don't know what to do, do I? I don't think I can go just do recreational stuff. But I might have a desire to work. Maybe not the same stress level that I had while on the job. What do you coach people to do here? How do you pull out of them their innermost feelings that they don't know?
Thank you, Bob. That's actually a great question. And one of the challenges at the beginning of the process to make a decision, one of the challenges is staying away from common behaviors, I'll describe those, and replacing them with decision processes. And here's what I mean by that. First of all, many people decide what career field to go into by one of two ways. First of all, many people simply replicate, meaning if I was an engineer in my full-time job all my career, then obviously in my second career I'll be an engineer again. It's what I know the best. I can talk my way through to get that kind of a job. And that's as much thinking about it as many people do. The other way, and it's also very common, is to do what psychologists call modeling. Now, modeling is where we think about what we want to do for a job, and because it doesn't jump right out at us, we say to ourselves, let me see, who do I know that's doing something that looks like it's fun, that seems like it's fun? And my neighbor down the street does something that sure looks fun to me. I think I'll do that. And that's pretty much, those are the two ways that people make decisions. And the reason that they come to me is to sort through what are some other ways of coming to a decision that's going to make them happy or help them to be happy in their career in the second phase and so forth. Frankly, I am a great believer in the process of knowing thyself. In other words, make decisions based on data, not on assumptions or on replication, modeling, and so forth. I have known too many people that in the end are very unhappy with those decisions. They didn't really think them through. So, how do we get that kind of data is usually the next question. We should start, I think, with, and I recommend this to everybody, no matter what age they are, where they are in their career process. And that is something, and a listener might want to write this down, career assessment testing. That's the official title of these kinds. There are many different ones. But they're all into a category called career assessment testing. Now, career assessment testing is usually a battery of tests. I don't think it's as valid when it's only one, like Myers-Briggs or something like that. But rather when it's several of them together And where can you get these kind of tests, which, by the way, have nothing to do with what you know. It's really about your likes and dislikes, your preferences, your style. It measures those kinds of things in very simple questions where there's no wrong answer. And you don't have to, quote-unquote, know something, which obviously that is very thrilling for Anne.
Yeah.
So always a bonus when you don't have to actually know something. Anyhow, the results of these tests, usually they'll take, depending on which battery you do, anywhere from an hour, hour and a half. Most of them can be done on the internet now. They're net-based, but you have to have an access in order to take them. I'll tell you the best place to get that. If you're interested in doing this, go to your local community college. Call them first and make sure that they offer this service. I can tell you that Montgomery College does in Rockville or any of their campuses.
And under what department? So if you call Montgomery College or community college and you get the switchboard, do we want the business section, the engineering section, the psychology section?
Good question. You want to ask for the career, for their career office. And they have a separate office with professionals there who do everything from the assessment through actually sorting through opportunities, reading resumes, helping people in those ways. And if you're a student, there's no cost to that. But most of the community colleges will offer those services to somebody from the community, but it will cost something if you're not either a teacher or you're a student there. But the cost is minimal. I did this myself when I retired the last time, now 2 years ago, this month, it's 2 years ago. And one of the first things I did was call up and make an appointment at Montgomery College. I took the tests and then went back to get feedback, because that's part of the process. They have a professional that will actually read the results and then interpret them to you and tell you basically not specifically what job you should be applying for, but it'll tell you what's called a family of jobs. So what kinds of jobs do people who score the way that we score on the test, what kinds of jobs do people report similar to us that they're the most pleased with that work? And actually, I got a surprise this last time, because I was in human resources throughout my career, and both as a consultant and as an actual line HR leader. And so I expected that to come up. But in my families of jobs, that was in my results, it said two things that were very interesting. It said, number one, you want to do something in front of people. You want to, which I've been doing workshops for many, many years. So I thought, well, that tracks. I guess I must have told it. I'm a ham. and then the second thing, which was very interesting to me, it said the other thing that I ought to look into is ADR, which is alternative dispute resolutions. My first question to the counselor who told me this, my first question was, huh? What's that? And she looked it up and told me that it was being a mediator or an ombudsman, something like that, where you help people come to decisions, to talk to each other and so on. Well, I never would have thought of that. That never would have occurred to me. And so I went out and did what I advise everybody to do. So when you get results like that, don't dismiss them or run right to them simply on that basis, but do a little research. So I did. And I called the Maryland Council for ADR. I called the National Association, the Professional Association. Got some materials from them, and I studied to learn what is it, what do they do, how do you become one, and so forth. Is it possible at 60 years of age to change my stripes and become something like that? And the answer seemed pretty clear. Yes, it was. So then I did one other thing, and which this is something that I advise all of my clients to do. Find somebody who does that, whatever it is. And buy them a cup of coffee, meet them, pick their brain, ask them about the career field? What has it meant to them? How do they enjoy it? What are the good things about it? What are the downsides about it? What are the things that you should be paying attention to? And of course, the critical last question that I asked the woman that I found and bought a Starbucks coffee for, my last question was to her, well, now that I've told you a little bit about me, if you were me, how would you get into that career field? You're already there. So who better to know the ports of entry? And she gave me some very good, simple advice about how to, first of all, join the associations, go ahead and join, and then some courses which were offered at Montgomery College, and that with one, even just one of those courses, I could hang out my shingle and become a mediator. And today I am an accredited mediator in Maryland. And that's not something I'm going to do full time, but take a case here and there. And because they were right, it is interesting and something. But I never would have gotten there if I had simply replicated or cloned what I saw somebody else doing by modeling to look for that career field. So it really has been helpful to me. That's the kind of thing that I try to encourage people with.
Okay, within the federal government, we have people beginning career, mid-career, pre-retirement. We concentrate a lot on pre-retirement, but we do seminars for the other folks as well and zero in on certain seminars. But let's take somebody that's been on the job for a while, maybe have a college degree, maybe don't. Doesn't make any difference. And they went to the job because they wanted to do what they thought was the thing that they're doing. Few months, few years into it, they say, you know, this isn't bad, but this isn't what I want to do with the rest of my life. How do you come to grips with that by yourself? Because you certainly can't tell your superiors that.
Right.
And then how do you surreptitiously, if you will, try to find an end around the blockage?
Sure. Well, again, I would follow the path that I laid out a moment ago by knowing thyself. But the good news is if they're a few years away from the actual retirement, they have time to do these kinds of things. Cause not everything will be as simple as what I picked out. Some things will require perhaps, taking some actual coursework, or a lot of jobs require, apprentice type time in the field doing whatever it is. And while you're still employed, you can use vacation time or time in the evenings and weekends to do, or on a volunteer basis, very important, on a volunteer basis to do the kind of work that you're aiming toward that really does move you into. I like to think of it often as a balance. Where in the years the furthest out from retirement, you're going to put in the least amount of effort toward finding that, because most of your efforts are still going to be towards your job. But as you get closer and closer to retirement, more and more of those efforts time should be made for them. And if you're liking it, if you're enjoying it, and you're adding the credentials that you've learned you need for whatever the work is, then at retirement, you really are not retiring. Because retiring would not be another job. You really are going into a second career, or for many of us, third, fourth, or fifth, but you're going into another career. And that is a wonderful opportunity again, I'm a great believer in professional associations, belonging to those, not only gives us instant credibility in whatever the area is, but it also provides constant flow of information and oftentimes opportunities. You know, most of these professional associations, if you're a member, you have access to their job boards. And I'll tell you, a lot of the professional association, or excuse me, a lot of people who hire in certain career fields begin at the professional association for that field's job board. and they put an ad there because it's very cheap. There, if in case you didn't notice, companies are not running ads in papers anymore. They are running ads electronically. And so to tap into that at the electronic career board of your professional association is a great way to find opportunities. And again, I want to emphasize the importance of volunteer work. Lots of people poo-poo that and say, oh, that doesn't count. Well, I volunteered, but that's certainly not. And I say, nay, I was in the HR, in HR positions, primarily recruiting for many, many years. And during that time, we counted what a person had done for volunteering as long as what they did mirrored an actual paid job. As long as we could see our way clear to that. Even something like people who do work, volunteer work at their church. We even have accepted that many times. And the reason is, if they were, for example, if they worked on, I remember one in particular, a person who worked on a construction project, some addition to the church or one of the outbuildings. And that person on a committee was part of the construction management. And they learned all about reading blueprints and approving construction invoices and all that goes into that and sticking to a budget. And then when they came to apply with our company, they said, well, my actual jobs were in something else, but I have this experience which qualifies me for the, I believe it was a facilities position that we were trying to hire into. And we counted that, that was a 2 or 3 year project the person worked on. And we got great references from them on that project. And again, a lot of folks that I've coached over the years miss that as an opportunity. Because unless they came to me as a coach, of course, but had previously missed that opportunity to use volunteer work as a credential for moving into an area that they may not have thought of, or certainly that they haven't worked in for pay.
I would say volunteering too is a good way to find out if you like something too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yep, it's a good test of that. You bet.
Let's say we have somebody working now, mid-career level, and they really like a certain part of the job. They're very good at what they do, so the old expression, you want something done, give it to a busy person. And they've now become so busy doing things that they really don't like to do, but they get it done. How do you coach that person or advise that person to approach the supervisor and say, listen, I'm really good at A through M here, but now you've added N through Z, and that wasn't in the equation, but I carry the weight for you if you ask me to, but I just can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's an example that's very near to my heart, because I have a client right now. I'll only say that that he's at NIH. And has that exact scenario that over the years has moved out of what he was trained to do out of necessity. And he has won kudos and appreciations from the bosses, but he's now no longer doing his love, but rather all the other stuff. And it's become now his career series. And so he's very concerned about it. And I'll tell you what he has done. At my suggestion, he contacted his human development office and asked them if they had any courses or even a coaching availability within the agency. And they do at NIH, and many of the agencies actually have people whose sole job is to meet with employees and to help them. Oftentimes, if he had known easily how to get out of it, he would have himself. But what he needed was me to tell him to go and ask, but he really needed somebody on the inside who knows the politic and understands how he could have gotten there, but also how to get back out of that through mentoring and some other ways without having to have somebody fight a battle for him. And that's how he's doing it. He is getting coached in how to have meetings with his boss, how to insert his or assert his needs, and offer the boss options, which I thought was a tremendous idea. Asking and not asking for it all at once, but saying, "Can we have a plan for how step by step we will move me from where I am to where I want to be?" And has involved the boss now in that process, which of course brings the boss into ownership and is again, we had that when I was with NGA, with National Geospatial Intelligence. They have a leadership center there where there are people who do exactly that as well, coaching folks in how to talk effectively with their bosses and other stakeholders to get buy-in and it's a great retention tool for an agency. I highly recommend that agencies do that. They don't all, but many are more enlightened and see that if you're going to hold on to somebody who does have basic talent, you need to address those kinds of issues, or they're going to switch agencies at the very least someday. And then the talent has, and all your training has been now being used by someone else.
All right. Besides downloading this show on our website, NITP Inc., and listening to you again and again and again, how would one contact you to maybe for you to provide them future guidance as well as attend one of our seminars? Now, I'm not trying to hustle seminars here, but you've got an awful lot of information. Okay. The business development ace corrected me. So how would one contact you?
Yeah, I'm very easy to reach as long as a person pays attention to the spelling of my name. My email address is my name, Mike, M-I-K-E, Townsend, so nothing in between, so just run it all together. But the last name is spelled T-O-W-N-S-H, don't forget the H, E-N-D. @AOL.com.
Great. Now, could I reverse the question before with the overloaded person and do the underloaded person? They took a job, they have drive, they have ambition, but they're in a job where they just don't get enough during the day. And, you know, they don't want to be the proverbial rate buster and go to the supervisor and say, "Listen, what do I do here? I really want more work, and I just don't want busy work. This is what I want to do." How do we reach an agreement?
Well, there again, there is the notion that I ascribe to is that one's career is in one's hands. That if that person or anyone were to quote unquote wait for lightning to strike, for opportunity to be brought to them in some miraculous fashion, then they will be waiting a full career's length for that. And so instead, I recommend that they take the initiative and find a very positive set of words to meet with their boss. Now, in most agencies, I believe it's now twice a year, they are required to have a career conference with their bosses, and which is preliminary to and part of the performance management system. That's a great opportunity. You know, so many people see the performance appraisal meeting as a report card and only that. And they wait perhaps anxiously for the day and go into the meeting, and they're relieved when the boss usually only says good things and maybe will mention one thing they could work on. And if they feel that if that's all that happened, they feel that they got out clean and so forth. The fact is, particularly for the person that you described just now, that is an opportunity, that meeting is an opportunity to come with an agenda, to come with a clearly stated need and a question. But the question is what I would call an inclusive question, meaning we are asking the boss to become part of the career team for me, the employee. We're asking the boss to understand and buy into, even if they don't have the answer today. But you got to get the conversation started, and as opportunities then present themselves, hopefully you are the one that will come to mind for the additional duties or the additional opportunities or something in another division comes available. Switching from one division to another for a lot of folks is a very daunting, scary prospect, because you're going from the known to the unknown and like that. But it's best done, in my view, with the boss as an ally, as an advocate for our career, not just the job that we're doing here, but to ask them. And I will tell you that that bosses in the federal government are being invited to, if not required to, attend lots of courses about how to do that. It's part of their leadership training. How to listen for it and then how to respond when somebody brings it up.
Okay, let's go there in a second. And now my boss just flashed me a sign. What was that, Ann?
The phone number if someone would like to call in and ask Mike or you a question.
Now, I'm an accountant finance type, and what is our phone number, Ann?
For the radio show?
Yes.
I don't have it.
Okay, it is 1-8. I knew you didn't. 1-877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Now, please be aware, we're at 10:30 Eastern Time on May 3rd. We go off air at 10:58.50, right, Dorothy? And don't call after that time. However, you can email us 24/7 at, what is our email address? For your benefit, name of the show, for as in four, not the number four, your as in Y-O-U-R, benefit as in benefit, at NITPINC.com. For those of you that are anxious about email addresses, NITP is a government retirement, mid-career, and pre-retirement seminar provider. We sell absolutely nothing other than seminars to agencies. You can't buy anything on the website. We won't spam you, but we will answer your questions for your benefit at NITPINC.com.
We only educate.
Oh, yes. And you've educated me well over the last 22
years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Michael, let me get back now and let's take a look at it from the boss's perspective. Some people or supervisors, let's say supervisors, they get promoted into a position that they might not necessarily like. They're still good at their job. They produce whatever is required of them. But when it comes time to sit down with Michael, they have a hard time saying, you know, you need to work on this, please. And so they skip it, or they fester, or they say the wrong thing. So how would you coach then a supervisor to talk to an employee to bring out the best in them that maybe they haven't seen yet?
Well, I encourage all supervisors to avail themselves of the training that's available. Most of the behaviors you just described are not something we're born with or we possess in some natural form. They are learned behaviors. So we learn how to coach others. We learn how to lead. But especially for the more technical folks, an engineer, for example, who was such a terrific engineer that somebody made them a manager. And now they don't really do engineering anymore. They have stacks of paper to move from one side of their desk to the other. And occasionally people coming to their door and asking questions that they are, again, ill-prepared to answer. Unless they avail themselves of the kind of training that I'm going to say every, I don't know every agency, but I'm familiar with a lot of them, I'm going to take a risk and say all agencies provide training in leadership skills that includes coaching. And the coaching skill, which is learnable, is something that it needs practice. It needs a rule set, so knowing where boundaries are and that sort of thing, and how to bring the best out of someone like that on an interpersonal basis. Again, something very difficult for a very technical person, usually a linear thinker, but they can learn to become as good as they can get at that, and then usually that's going to be quite sufficient. It won't happen simply by wishing that they were better at it or waiting till the time when they say the wrong thing to the wrong person, and then a set of charges arrives at their doorstep with a person from HR in behind them with a stern look on their face. And they, of course, are clueless as to what could possibly have been interpreted in the charge. But it happens. And often it happens because the person inadvertently said something or gestured in a way and so forth, all of which are things that are covered in this kind of leadership coaching training.
Good comment. It was a number of weeks ago we had a guest, and his name is Bill Bransford. Bill is a senior partner at Shaw Bransford and Roth, mm-hmm. and they deal primarily, excuse me, Bill, if I'm misstating this, with federal employees, but on both sides. So I'd ask him, okay, how, as an employee, do I set myself up to do a good job and don't get into trouble or don't get sued, and vice versa? As a manager, what should I watch out? What are the trigger words that I'm afraid to use because they'll light a fuse? And your comment just reminded me of that show. By the way, that show is archived on our website, nitpinc.com, left-hand side of the homepage. Very simple webpage. It says quick links. It's in red. Click on For Your Benefit and just scroll back and listen to Bill's show, which, of course, you would want to listen to today's show as well.
Absolutely. Over and over again with copies for the children.
I had a question. I was looking at looking at a list that Mike and I had talked about before the show, and I was interested in the one bullet point here, the leveraging your federal experience. That's, mm-hmm. I know we're jumping a little ahead to after retirement, but is that all right?
Anything you want.
Okay. Well, thank you for asking that, because the agency that I worked with a few years back was part of the IC, which is the intelligence community. And I can probably speak most authoritatively about that group of agencies because I watched it unfold. That coming from there, and pretty much any of the law enforcement agencies will be the same, meaning that the skills that they have used while a federal employee are marketable, transferable, desired, not a small point, and of course their clearances in the private sector, often working for the government. But the fact is that to move from one area where you're being paid by the government to do something to the private sector is something that, again, in the intelligence community, I'll tell you where to find the folks that would be looking for you. They're somewhere out on your parking lot wandering around looking for you because they have a job to offer to you. That's how desperate they are. And secondly, even if you don't happen to bump into them because, well, some of the parking lots actually are off limits, you can go to the second opportunity, which is you know who the contractors are that work for your agency. You know who they are. You can find out on the internet, and I believe it's on DOL's website, or it might be OPM. You check both, but there is a listing of all government contractors, what agencies they work for, and what kinds of work are they doing. And so if you don't happen to know who all works for your agency, go there and take a look. All you'll need to do is send an email to their recruiting office, and any company's website will have a link to their recruiting office, and send your resume. And from the moment you hit the send button, go ahead and start reaching for the phone, because it will be ringing shortly for many employees, particularly, again, coming from the armed forces, the protective services, and the intelligence community, because those are all premium jobs, and they are looking for you. And I have known so many people that have been able to move very smoothly from one to the other, because in many cases they actually work back to the agency that they had been employed by, simply a different colored ID card is all. And people in those agencies are chuckling right now because they know what I mean. That's actually the joke. I see your ID card color changed. It only means that you have all the clearances that you always had, but you have moved onto a contractor's payroll. And the government, by the way, has made that within the last 15 years, has made a number of changes that make that more and more desirable for you to do that. They really have had to do it because of the retention issues and the ability to hire people and get them cleared.
Funny story. It was a number of years ago. I was at an intelligence community's building, in an office building, not their own. And I kept seeing this red light blinking. And I said, isn't that a fire light? And they go, no, that means you're in the building, because I was not one of them. Mm-hmm. I just never forget that. Anyway, let me get on. You seem very at peace with yourself. You and I have never met one-on-one before. We talked on the mm-hmm. phone, and of course, Ann and Nancy called up and says, you want this guy to work with us. And I look at this book, and it says Comfort Zones. All right, here's the question. People generally, but not always, they're happy with what they do, but they're not necessarily comfortable. And they go home, and it takes them an hour or two to unwind because they're under so much stress and whatnot. How do you find your comfort zone where you're comfortable at work, or more so, and you're comfortable after work?
Well, the book that Bob's referring to is a book by Elwood Chapman, called Comfort Zones. It came out about 10 years ago, I believe, this current version. It's called A Comprehensive Guide to Retirement. It essentially walks the reader through. It's very well done, I think. It walks the reader through the stages of decision making about both your current work as well as the future. Much of what we've been talking about today is captured in his thoughts. I have another book here that you might find interesting as well, which is called Don't Retire, Rewire. And it's by an old friend of mine, Jerry Sedler, and Rick Miners, her husband, actually, Rick Miners. What Jerry and Rick advocate is the importance, very similar to the comfort zone. They believe that passion in the latter part of our lives is far more important than all of the other life levels. If you think to the who was the psychologist? I'll think of his name in a second. Not Pavlov, but
Sigmund Freud.
No.
Sigmund.
It's the pyramid thing.
Yeah. The levels of need, that the most primary need, of course, is food, shelter, and then that's the bottom one, and the top one is enlightenment. So self-actualization.
Where's money?
Oh,
Bob. Oh, money's along the way, and that, of course, is what pays for the Enlightenment. No. But what these folks are advocating, and I do as well, is the importance of finding something to do that we really believe in and that allows us, I'm so glad this question came up, that allows us to, at the end of the day, every single day, know that we made a difference. It mattered that we were in this world this day. It mattered that we did whatever it was we did today. It was important. And that doesn't mean that we have to work for the UN or be in some small village feeding the poor or whatever. It could do those things, but it also means that if there's something about which you have great affinity. I just did a helped a company close a plant down in Alabama, and a couple of the people who were employees there were going to take retirement. They were of age and had met all the qualifications and really didn't want to go get another job. But what they did do is to open a nonprofit association for grandparenting. Interesting concept. And it was built on the notion that many people, like myself, become grandparents by acts of nature. But they're not necessarily prepared to be a good grandparent. And to me, being a good grandparent is, without any training, I would say, is knowing how to hold on to a child just long enough for mom or dad to grab them back and take them on their way, because I don't have that. And these folks believed that there is, because each of them is a grandparent, and they believe that there is a need that could be fulfilled in this niche of training folks. And so they formed an association for grandparents in their little portion of Alabama, very near Atlanta, actually, on that side of Alabama. But it's a work of passion for them. It's a work of their belief that the world would be a better place if children had more layers of adult influence as they grow up in the most effective way possible. And my job, as it turned out, was simply to help them to come up with this idea, to formulate their action plan. And none of them actually needs the money, so they're each taking just a little bit out as the coffer grows and so forth. But it's something that they've been written up in the paper. I just got an email from them. They got written up in the newspaper, and there are some people coming to visit them from Atlanta to talk about opening up a similar group in the major metropolitan area and so forth. This kind of a thing is something that is built on individuals' identification of a need, their own involvement in that need, and recognition that there will be a payoff that's not financial, but to feel good as they hear the stories from other struggling grandparents, to feel that they handled something better with a grandchild than they would have otherwise, because they had the training that went on, and they do small group sessions where they meet together and so forth, and they share stories in sort of a small group environment. And I do want to say this, Bob. I'm talking about people who started something for grandparents here. That's really not my point. My point is that there is something that everybody owns. That's something that's a passion for them, that they consider important. And it could be a sports team. It could be anything that they feel that if they could improve it, if they could do something about it in this, their I call it the centerpiece of one's life. You know, the centerpiece on a table always makes the table look better. Well, a centerpiece from a career perspective is that job or that work that you did that you will always be able to point to and say, I was part of that. And very importantly, I hope that any listener heard me say how wonderful and rich life can be when we go to bed at night. And before we close our eyes, we can say to ourselves, it mattered today. Today was important.
Let me ask you a question. Now, this is coming from me.
Okay.
For those of you all that don't know, I'm an accountant. I'm a tax type. And I deal a lot with the IRS. And I have nothing bad to say about the IRS. And I'm not saying that in case there are anyone. I've found over the years, they are not hard to work with. They have an awful job because they have to collect money from people that don't think that they should be paying it. But I really like my job and I like taxes. But I run into the client, fine client, but just doesn't understand why the IRS is doing X, Y, or Z, or that they messed up. So at the end of the day, I've thrown my best pitch, so to speak, and I haven't hit a strike. I can't convince the IRS, only because the IRS is probably right. The client's unhappy, and there I am sitting saying, I didn't do such a good job. I did the best job I could, but I didn't push the ball across the goal line, to use a sports friend. Well, how do you get into somebody's head? I can't be the only one. Forget accountants, but it could be engineers. It could be a clerk. You know, they didn't get the job done, and it wasn't because anything that they did or didn't do. Well, how do they go to bed at night?
Well, in my career as a coach, one thing that I have noted is the fact that there's no such thing as 100% in anything. And therefore, any expectation that within a job where every single day is going to be a win in the win column is naive at best. However, what I think happiness in life is built on is the preponderance of time and effort. If I felt that I was spending my life working with folks who never got jobs, who were always dissatisfied at retirement and walked away feeling that it hadn't helped at all working with me, then I need to find something else. If that were the case, it's not the case, but if that were the case, then I would want to do that. And at the same time, there have been folks over these last few years that I've been doing this who I have to admit, they were, I don't want to call them unplaceable because I don't think anybody's unplaceable, but they certainly could not, they were not prepared to move into the kind of work that they had set as a goal. It was unrealistic and I was unable to persuade them of that reality check. And so I'm with you on that, but I look to the preponderance of the cases, the preponderance of life, and recognizing that fortunately it's the exception rather than the rule that we have a miss instead of a hit.
So I needn't come to you after the show is over and say, you know, I really want to play in the NBA. And you probably look at me and say, well, there's two things you're lacking. One, you're 40 years past your prime. And second, you don't have any skills. So I'm sure you would be much more diplomatic than that. But
yes.
I know that. No, I've known that since the last 62 years that I never play there.
And my dancing career is way off the charts now as well. Yes.
All right.
Baryshnikov does not need to worry.
All righty. So we've got about five more minutes here. General comments you'd want to share with our listening group. And by the way, an awful lot of people listen to this. Well, an awful lot of people. Most people listen to this show when it's archived. They don't listen to it at 10 a.m. Eastern time on a Monday because they're working. But it gets downloaded by a significant amount come Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday. It starts to taper down. So general comments.
Well, certainly the probably if I have access to an audience, as I do at this moment, to convey something. You noted earlier when we were talking before the show started that the name of my business is Carpe Diem Coaching, and my website for my coaching practice is www.mybestdayistoday.com.
And do that again, yes.
Slowly. Yes, slowly, like in the 60s. Yes, it's www.mybestdayistoday.com. And I would just make this comment as to why I chose that as an email address and the name of my company, which is what Carpe Diem means, seize the day.
That's not marine stuff, huh?
No, it's not. but equally true on the water, yeah. And that is this. I have come to appreciate and to guide my life by way of that principle. The principle that what matters really most of all is today. I've seen too many at my age, and I guess our approximate collective ages, we've seen a large number of friends who didn't make it this far. And we've seen folks who have been miserable for many years of the life that they did live. And what I've observed is that many of us, and I was guilty of this at earlier parts of my life, we have concentrated on trying to find our joy, our happiness, with memories, on the one hand. What has happened in the past and how wonderful that was, and so I'm going to feel joyful now remembering all the good things that used to happen. Although they're gone now, but nonetheless, I'll find my joy that way. And others, sometimes the same folks, wait for their joy. They expect it to arrive someday. That's that futuristic view. And you hear this when people say, well, when I am married, I will be happy. When I reach retirement, I will be happy. When I get the promotion to a 14, I will be happy, et cetera, et cetera. Always happiness placed out into the future as though it's something that's coming at us. And guess what happens? When we get to each of those, there's something else that we now see is required in order to be happy. And so whenever that happens, once the marriage happens, well, as soon as I'm divorced, I'm going to be happy, et cetera, et cetera. And so honoring that observation, I have decided as soon as the gunfire slows down, clearly what makes a difference is today. The past is gone. The future's not here yet, but I do have today. I know that. And as long as I can make the most of this day and enjoy everything that's going on, then that's what matters, and it informs all of my coaching and all of my life as a result.
What a great way to end the show.
Yes, Anne, absolutely.
Comment? Dorothy's giving us the high sign.
Okay. I'll just see you next week. Bob and John Elliott doing Best of the Best questions from our seminars.
Okay, thanks for listening, and we'll see you then, or maybe we'll see you in Kansas City at the OPM conference.
Yes, bye-bye. This week.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
WFED, Washington.